Governor Tony Evers delivered his 2019-2021 state budget address last week. In it, the former head of the Department of Public Instruction proposed a $1.4 billion, with a B, increase in K-12 public school funding. That includes a $600 million increase for special education over 2 years. Governor Evers also announced that the state would once again cover two-thirds of school costs. The governor referred to his budget as the people's budget, rather than a piece of political partisanship. Not all lawmakers agreed with that assessment. Members of the Republican-controlled legislature called Evers' budget proposals a liberal wish list and non-starters. They also said Wisconsin can't afford it. As the process unfolds, we'll see how the divided state government finds enough common ground to agree on the final budget, due by July 1st. While we can't know at this point what the final budget will include, today's guests will help us understand how Governor Evers' proposals could affect school districts in our region. Thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on the Ideas Network station here in western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. This is The West Side. Three guests join me for the conversation today. First, in the studio with me in Eau Claire is Dr. Marianne Hardybeck. She is the superintendent for the Eau Claire Area School District. Her district serves around 11,000 students across 22 schools. She previously served in various capacities at schools in Virginia, North Carolina, and New York. Marianne Hardybeck, welcome back to the West Side.
Thank you, Rich.
Good to have you. Joining us by phone from Somerset, his office in Somerset, is Dr. Mark Bezik. He is the district administrator of the Somerset School District in St. Croix County. His district serves around 1,500 students across three schools. Dr. Bezik is also on the executive committee of the National School Superintendents Association. He formerly led the Elk River School District in Minnesota. He joins us by phone. Dr. Bezik, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. And Ann Chapman joins us by phone from Milwaukee. She is a senior researcher at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. The Wisconsin Policy Forum is a nonpartisan statewide organization that researches and analyzes all sorts of public policy. Ann's focus is on K-12 education. She joins us by phone, as I said. Ann Chapman, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. Listeners, our phone lines are open for you. What are your thoughts about school funding in the governor's budget? Are you on board with some of his proposals, or do you think he's going a bit too far, asking for too much? Or are you an educator? Do you have kids in school? We'd love to hear your thoughts, your questions, and your stories. Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. So let's get a little bit more into who we're talking with today. Basically a round robin of, your backgrounds and what brought you to your current role in education. Let's start with Ann Chapman. What about you? How did you get into policy research for Wisconsin Policy Forum?
Well, it's a second career for me. I was doing fundraising for United Way when I lived in Utah and Salt Lake City. And one of the things that really drove me, not so much was the fundraising, but sort of digging into the root causes of some of the problems we were funding. So I went back to school and became a policy researcher.
Okay.
Started off kind of doing generalist research in all types of different areas, and then sort of funneled and found my way to an interest area, which is education, and specifically lately K-12 education.
We're going to get into, and hopefully I'm sure you can help us understand this, because this is one of the driest and most complicated sections of state government, if you ask me. I've been covering various different stories for on funding for schools, and I'm still trying to understand and learn as I go. Marianne Hardybeck, so what brings you, tell us a little bit about your background beyond what I already mentioned, and your role at Eau Claire School Area School District.
So I've basically had two careers in education. I was a teacher for 25 years. I taught at all levels, elementary, middle, and high school, in large and small schools and in large and small districts. And my second part of my career in education was as an administrator. I've been a high school principal, director, an assistant superintendent for human resources in a very large district. And then I came to Eau Claire to be a superintendent, and so glad that I did.
And we're glad to have you. And Dr. Bezik, what about yourself? How did you... It sounds like you went to a few different districts, but were you always an administrator, or did you start in teaching as well?
Actually, I did start in teaching. I'm a proud graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Stout. From there, I taught for 10 years, was a middle school and high school principal for 10 years, and then been a superintendent for the rest of my career. Last superintendency, I spent 10 years at the 8th largest district in Minnesota in the Elk River system. Very involved with the political process and structure across the river, and being on the National Superintendent Association Executive Committee, very involved at the national level on educational policy.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Then 3 years ago, I took the position here in Somerset, which is kind of part of my home roots here in the area. Having a summer home in the area growing up was a good opportunity to get involved back in Wisconsin.
Well, I'm glad that we've got superintendents with us who have been in different school districts and different states, different systems, so we'll be able to kind of get a better idea of how things vary from state to state. So with that, let's just get into it. Speaking of the budget, this is all super preliminary. Governor Evers' budget proposal is just that. It's a proposal, and it's very likely to change throughout the spring and into the summer. So at this point, and I'll start with you, Mark Bezik, is there anything in that document that the districts can use as you guys start to plan your next budgets? I mean, or is it just kind of wait and see at this point?
Well, obviously it's wait and see. It's such a change from what's happened in the past here. You know, it's the one thing I will say, it's, you know, with Tony in there, at least we, you know, we're at the table and we're not on the menu, so to speak. So it's not playing defense and protecting what you have. Now we're actually talking about let's improve the system. So when I look through the preliminary budget and the different areas they had, I mean, a lot of good stuff for schools. And, you know, one thing he talks about there is restructuring the school funding formula. And I'll say this from experience across the river and here is, you know, these formulas are so antiquated. You know, when I look back at across the river, they talk about the Minnesota Miracle. And, you know, that was crafted back when the hottest piece of technology was a transistor radio back in the 60s, and we're still operating that way. You know, you can't really have 21st century schools if you have a 20th century mindset. So regardless of where we're at, and I see this across the country, it's the same conversation we're having at our national meetings with these people from all over, and same thing in D.C. The mindset has to change. These kids only get one shot at this, and we got to do our best. And it's all about priorities. You know, they talk about this, the big ticket item here. You know, you have to invest in your future, and what a better future than our kids.
Marianne Hardybeck, let's go to you. So things vary from larger districts in more urban areas to rural districts, but do you have a sense that we're moving from that the school superintendents and the districts are moving from being on the menu to at the table? I mean, would you go that far?
Well, I think it's a great point. You know, I serve as the vice president of the Urban Superintendents Association of America, and as Mark said, in his organization with AASA, of which I'm also a member, it is the conversation nationally about school funding and where does it fit in the priorities for states. We hear a lot about competing priorities, whether it's infrastructure or transportation, other social programs, but it's good to see that education has moved up on that list of priorities. And restructuring the fair funding formula would make a huge difference. If it went through as Governor Evers has proposed, ECASD is proposed to receive an additional $8.5 million. Now, this wouldn't go into effect until, 2020-21. It's so hopeful to kind of see that investment come back to education and come back to an investment in our children. And perhaps in a way that would be more equalized across the state. How much investment goes into your education is really determined by your zip code.
Definitely. And we've heard that for years and years and years at WPR. Ann Chapman, I mean, I know you can't predict the future, but this budget has just been proposed. We've already seen some lines in the sand. As a policy analyst, how do you even approach this? I mean, obviously you're going to crunch some numbers and try to figure out what it all means, but you're doing that at the same time when it's likely all to change within months, right?
Yep, it's a moving target. And so one indicator that I'm looking at, though, is that over the last year, there was the Blue Ribbon Commission on School Funding that's been meeting, and hearings have been taking place across the state. And this bipartisan commission heard testimony and came out with recommendations based on what they heard. And to some people's surprise, many of those recommendations are in line with some of the things Superintendent Evers was proposing. So, you know, when I look at what came out of that Blue Ribbon Commission, and then I see what is in this budget, such as the increase in special education of $600 million over the next 2 years,
mm-hmm.
Some of the changes in, recommendations and, increasing revenue limit adjustment, increasing the low revenue limit for, low spending districts, mm-hmm. some sparsity aid. You know, these are things that were discussed in a bipartisan way, and so there's some indication that some of these things might go through. But yeah, as the legislature gets its hands on the budget, it will be interesting to see what actually is workable across the aisles.
And if you could just walk us through briefly, like, the process. So the budget's been introduced. We've got this committee that's nearly all-powerful when it comes to state finances, known as joint finance. So how does this thing develop as we move on?
Yeah, the joint finance committee will consider whether to use the governor's budget as sort of the base or to sort of create their own. They'll, make changes themselves and kind of go back and forth with their own proposals and amendments and provisions. And they'll get analysis from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, and then they'll come up with their sort of unified, proposal. And then it'll go to the Assembly and the Senate, and then it will undergo more discussion.
But also the governor has a pretty powerful veto pen.
Right. Right, and then after that, the governor has a chance to not so much add new things, but strike things out, and therefore can kind of change the effect of some of the provisions.
Yeah, striking. He could even strike individual words to change the meaning of sentences, from what I understand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's crazy to think it used to be you could strike out individual letters. But anyway, that's a whole nother show.
Right. Right.
So, and Chapman, I'll stick with you and then kind of go around the table again. Some Republicans have already hinted at that they're going to introduce their own budget, that they're just going to toss everything that Governor Evers has proposed. So how does that change things, if that happens?
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Although, we have heard some Republicans talk about some of the provisions Governor Evers has offered as things that they might support. Like I mentioned, special education seems to have a pretty bipartisan support, the extent to which, to whatever, we don't know what the number will be. I think school funding in general seems to be a bipartisan, something that's enjoying bipartisan support right now. The question is, I think what Republicans are pushing against is the amount Governor Evers is discussing seems to be somewhat difficult to balance with other priorities. But other things that, Republicans have said that they're interested in supporting is the UW tuition freeze and mm-hmm. rural school funding. So there are some areas where there's bipartisan support. But yeah, if they offer their own budget from the beginning, it'll be very interesting to see how it takes shape.
Yeah, and when any sort of final budget is actually passed. Mark Bezik, I want to go to you since you've got the rural perspective over in Somerset. the governor, former Governor Walker, and Republicans in the legislature have pointed to the last budget as, you know, saying that, hey, we increased all this money. It was a bigger budget, but there was criticism that was kind of a political tactic in Governor Walker's failed reelection campaign. So one of the things that they had included was more like sparsity aid. So did the last budget help Somerset schools? And can you compare kind of like that last budget with what you're seeing in Tony Evers' proposal?
Sparsity doesn't help us over here.
How's that?
In Somerset, we're not that remote or, you know, what have you, and that, so that doesn't give us really much to go on there. You know, when I look at the two budgets, you know, I love Tony's. No educator would not love Tony's. You know, it's great, and I think a couple of the big things in the rural area here that we really get that affects us is the special education funding, and you know, the hot piece right now is the social-emotional issues that we're dealing with now. You know, we have about a $1.8 million cross-subsidy, which, when I say that, I mean we have to take out of our general fund to subsidize our special education programs, which we need. You know, that's the equalizer, and those programs are great. We need them for kids, but it also, you know, takes away from the general operation of the district also. So we're running a $28.6 million bonding piece this spring, plus a $1 million levy override for operational costs. If they would just fix the special education funding piece, that would help us and small districts like us out dramatically. You know, one thing we don't have here, you know, we're suffering from aging facilities here. We got a beautiful campus, but they're aging, and they haven't had the money to stick into all the maintenance items that should be. So now all of a sudden we've got, you know, over 20-some million dollars in three buildings that we need attention right now. Again, it's about priorities, and if we can start patching up some of these things that are taking away from our general fund so we can put them into our facilities, we can compensate our people regionally appropriately, you know, those are big things that will help us.
Marianne Hardybeck, this budget, you know, there's a lot of hope from folks like you, it sounds like, but you know, with regards to some of the proposals that have been changed, what is the biggest potential? I mean, you mentioned the fair funding formula, I believe, and that's something that's been talked about for years and years. So how does that compare to with the current funding formula? What would be the change? How do you explain it to folks that aren't in that world?
So I think Ann said it well when she talked about this being a process, and hopefully that both sides will take into consideration the recommendations from the Blue Ribbon Commission. Mm-hmm. So I can tend to be hopeful that there will be some consensus and some balance. In previous budgets, most of the aid has come in categorical aid.
What does that mean?
And that means that the aid comes for a specific purpose. So even in Governor Evers' budget, there are funding increases in special education, which would certainly help our district, and in bilingual, bicultural education, which would, again, help our district because we have a growing need in that area. The problem, though, with having aid come in that way is that it can change from year to year, or from biennial budget to biennial budget. So it makes planning for those programs extremely difficult, and it makes planning for your general budget very difficult because you don't know in 2 years if you're still going to have that money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, under his funding proposal, that whole idea of having a 200 per revenue limit increase for 1920 and 204 increase for 2021, the proposal includes that index revenue limit increase adjustment to the CPI or the Consumer Price Index.
So it ties it to inflation.
Right, and we prefer this being in addition to the revenue limit because it provides us an ability to kind of have some additional levy increase.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of maintain that predictability.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We've got so much more to talk about with regard to how the state budget, Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal, might boil down to Western Wisconsin and the schools here. Governor Tony Evers gave his first budget address last week. In it, he proposed increasing K-12 school funding by $1.4 billion, including $600 million more for special education. We're talking about these topics and these issues with Dr. Marianne Hardybeck, Superintendent for the Eau Claire Area School District, Dr. Mark Bezik, District Administrator for Somerset School District in St. Croix County, and Ann Chapman, Senior Researcher for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We pick up our conversation when we return. This is the West Side on Ideas 88.3 and 88.7.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells. Vacation planning tools like the 2019 Wisconsin Dells Vacation Guide and Online Trip Builder are now available. More is at wisdells.com, the water park capital of the world. Support also comes from the UW-Eau Claire Forum Series. Peggy Orenstein, author of Girls and Sex, talks about the sexual landscape facing today's young women. March 5th at Schofield Auditorium. UWEC.edu.
Welcome back to the West Side. Next week, we'll look at transportation funding in western Wisconsin. Counties in our region have a range of transportation needs. How well does the new state budget proposal address them? That's next week, right here on the West Side. Today, we're talking with three guests about school funding in western Wisconsin. Governor Tony Evers gave his first budget address last week. He proposed increasing school funding by $1.4 billion and returning to a two-thirds model for funding the school, two-thirds support from the state. Where the state covers, that's just scratching the surface. There's a lot more to this. And we're talking about it with three guests, including Dr. Marianne Hardybeck, Superintendent for the Eau Claire Area School District, Dr. Mark Bezik, Administrator for the Somerset School District, and Ann Chapman, Senior Researcher for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 1-800-228-5615. Do you follow public K-12 education policy? Does it even factor into your daily life beyond, you know, sending the kids to school? Give us a call. 1-800-228-5615. I wanted to kind of go back to the funding formula change, the Blue Ribbon Commission, you know, findings. Ann Chapman, what is the difference between the fair funding formula and the current school funding formula? I mean, how does it even work?
Well, there's a number of differences. One of the things Marianne was referring to was the conversion of some of the things that we think of getting away from categorical aid and, you know, building into the funding formula some of the things that address student need. So, for example, in one of the most interesting and important provisions in it is that it puts a weight on economically disadvantaged students that makes them worth more than, you know, one pupil. So it basically provides more funding for students from economic disadvantaged backgrounds, which, you know, there's consensus that these students tend to have higher needs and their, you know, districts can incur more costs to give them the support they need. So, you know, in another case with a student that has extra needs like special education or something, the district has put that into what's called a categorical aid. So just sort of money, in a program on top of the formula. In this fair funding initiative, those low-income pupils are counted as 1.2 pupils. So it's built right into the formula. So it has that predictability. It provides funding according to student need, which is one of the things that Governor Evers has been talking about he wants to do. There's a number of other things. There's some somewhat arcane things where there were some money was going into tax credits, which looked like it was going into school aid. And so those tax credits are going to be built right in, you know, going straight to aid to help students. There is a provision in there to hold harmless any district that might lose money based on what they've earned in the past. According to how things shake out, you know, in the calculation of this new formula, if a school district might lose money under that provision, they would be held harmless. And then another one that I'll mention is that in the past, school districts that were providing full-day four-year-old kindergarten, those students were not being counted as a full student. They were being counted as about, you know, half a pupil. Mm. And those will be now counted at 100% in the new formula. So those are some of the things. And then one other thing is that every district will have a guaranteed minimum of $3,000 per student.
Yeah.
So there's a few districts in the formula right now who don't get any aid at all, and this would guarantee that that's not the case.
I remember the per pupil basic minimum, but the new formula, you know, the fair funding formula, would it still take into account property values? Because I remember that was kind of an issue in some districts in the rural areas that have a lot of high-value property but a lot of low-income students as well.
Right, yeah. I think that $3,000 minimum is one way that they get at that, and there are other ways that they try to get at that as well. One of the ways that gets at that is when you weight students with higher needs, such as, you know, low-income students, the way the formula works, that helps the property value per student look a little bit lower. So it helps reflect maybe the a little more accurately the true wealth of the community.
Mark Bezek, your district, as you mentioned, bonding, and so you've got some referendum. You've got a referendum proposal coming up in April. Is that correct? What are you asking voters? You're asking voters to basically agree to having their property taxes raised so that you can address some of these mechanical issues. And also, or was this just for programming? For instance,
it's both, Rich. It's,
right.
We're running two questions: $1 million operational levy, which will help protect class sizes, help us keep our elective courses or music or different programs at the high school, college, and the schools. Our transportation issues are always on the table. You know, our professional development curriculum cycle, you know, co-curriculars and athletics, and try to maintain our staffing levels. We're deficit spending, you know, probably around $450,000 just because of increases with health care and operational costs over the years. And the district has never had a levy override here or additional dollars. So this is the first one that we have. And obviously costs have gone up since the funding formula was redone back in 93. The bonding part of it is we've got, you know, we had some really big issues here that we had to deal with, and we just don't have the money to deal with them out of pocket, so to speak, out of our general fund. So the decision was made to go to referendum. We had to do a condition assessment, and we found that we have between $12 and $20 million worth of urgent or end of life cycle issues in the district, which for a district of our size with three buildings is quite a bit. And so we're very fortunate as we go out for this referendum that we have $20 million tax capacity coming off of our books. So the tax increase is not as hard as it would be as if we were just going out asking for a $28 million bond. So, you know, the stars are lining up on this one, but it's really about an investment back into the schools here. And, you know, the one thing that I've talked to Tony about, and I've talked to our state senator, Patty Schachter, about is, you know, one of the programs we had across the river was a lease levy program where you could, the district, the school board, could go and invest and do the maintenance on a building without going to a public vote. But it was a very structured program with the state. You had to create a 10-year plan and really document what you were going to do, and the state would approve it, what have you. But that actually gave the school board local control, local authority to fix up their buildings. Hmm. I've been in some districts where they just cannot pass referendums, and the buildings deteriorate. What happens? They lose kids. They lose their school. We don't want to do that here. You know, we've got a great school system here. We're in the midst of larger districts, but we've got a real gem here, and we want to protect the people's investment. So that's, we're going out for two questions.
Yeah, and that'll be April. We'll see. But Ann Chapman, the number of referendums that have been put to voters in different school districts around the state, the number has increased, and also the passage rate has increased.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Sure. 2018 was a record year for school referenda in Wisconsin. It was the highest number on record of passed referenda and the highest dollar amount. So In 2018, 90% of the referenda passed, school referenda passed, and that equated to about $2 billion. And the number of referenda was 157, and that was the highest number of referenda questions since 2001. So this is something that the governor's budget is trying to address through the fair funding formula and other provisions that, through the revenue limit, adjustments and some of these other provisions to help school districts, have what they need at the outset instead of having to go to the voters, on a recurring basis.
And I know that you study policy, you don't make it, but what can, our listeners take away from the fact that the number of referendums increased and the passage rate increased? I mean, is that tell us in general anything about where people are at on public K-12 education?
Well, definitely. I mean, we know from polling. So, for example, the Marquette Law School poll since 2015 has been showing that a majority of people would rather see increasing their property taxes for schools to property tax relief. So we're seeing that support from the grassroots growing. And, the reasons for it are probably multiple, but, one of the things public school leaders point to is that the revenue limit has been kept flat for several years. So it's not growing with inflation, which means, the spending authority of districts is not keeping pace with just basic costs. I mean, we're seeing an increase in referenda for operating. These aren't, for facilities or non-recurring things. I mean, some of the things I looked up the referenda in the sort of Northwest, some of the districts in Northwest Wisconsin coming up in April, and there's a pretty big handful of them that are just operational and maintenance expenses or to continue educational programming. That's not, I don't think, what, referenda were originally intended to do.
Right. Yeah, it seems like they used to be used for major building projects, and I know there was, upkeep. Marianne Hardybeck, the Eau Claire Area School District is no stranger to referendums. There were just some that were passed, right? What were those for?
So in 2016, our voters passed a referendum which gave us some operational funds to deal with employment compensation, with technology infrastructure, with some security issues that we had with our networks, keeping our student and staff data safe, class size, and, keeping those staffing levels, but being able to kind of remain competitive with your staff. It also addressed 25 years of deferred maintenance. And I think that, we had 60 projects that were to be completed over 3 years. In the first 2 years, we've completed 60 projects, and we have 20 more to go.
Okay.
And we hope to complete those this summer. I think Anne makes a good point in that sometimes it's difficult if you're not in school funding every single day and not into the details of it, for the taxpayer or the voter to understand that we don't have spending problems in our school districts. We have a revenue problem, and the revenue cap keeps us from keeping pace with the increasing costs of doing business. It doesn't keep pace with the consumer price index. So our operations continue to grow, and the expenses for those, with benefits for employees and pay and just running a school district, just keeping the lights on and keeping those buildings and being good stewards of those buildings, those costs increase every single year, but your revenue doesn't increase.
There are plenty of people in the legislature and otherwise that feel like there is a spending problem, that it's all about spending problems. So, we've also heard people that call in to this show complaining that they have to pay property taxes at all since their kids are out of school and they're not really affected by it. What's the counter to that?
Well, I would ask people to think about first of all, an investment in your foot in the future, you know, with our children. But also, you know, most of us received a public education, and we benefited from that in some way. And the ability to be able to pay taxes sometimes comes from the education that we received as children. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an investment in the community. We certainly see in communities that fail to invest in their public schools that they go on the decline. They can't attract business to the community. Crime increases. Social problems increase. So education is really a way for kids to get a step up and for the community to get a step up.
Mark Bezik, since the governor has introduced this proposal, these proposals to increase funding substantially for school districts, do you think there's a chance that that could hurt the chances of the referendum questions passing in the Somerset district?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rich. I thought of that also, but I think most people understand the politics of this. You know, this is a proposal,
mm-hmm.
and you know, as Ann and Kathleen or Mariana said, that you know, it's really kind of a the politics will take over now. But I think, you know, to back up just a little bit to one of Marianne's points there, you know, it's in everyone's best interest, or I think it was your question, Rich, about not paying taxes and what have you.
Yeah.
It's in everyone's best interest to educate each and every kid to their fullest potential. Our economy, our way of life, depends on a highly educated workforce. And, you know, the dynamics of what's happening, you know, in the 21st century and what have you, we have to invest in these programs and these kids. I mentioned before, these kids have one shot to get it right. And it's a very, you know, we're not competing against our neighbors anymore. We're not even competing within our own country. These kids are competing with kids across the world for, you know, high-paying, you know, good jobs. And we have to get them ready for that. So, again, whether your school is successful or if it folds up, you're going to pay property taxes to somewhere for educating kids. My piece here is when I get asked that question, well, why don't we just let our district dissolve? Well, you know what? Do you want to pay taxes in the other districts around and not have a school? I mean, that's kind of the comeback to that. It's in everyone's best interest to invest in their local school.
We're talking about possible implications of Governor Tony Evers' state budget proposal for schools right here in western Wisconsin. Our three guests are staying with us for the rest of the hour. We still can take your calls, 1-800-228-5615. If you've got questions or comments, I'm joined by Dr. Marianne Hardybeck, superintendent of the Eau Claire Area School District, Dr. Mark Bezik, district administrator for the Somerset School District, and Ann Chapman, senior researcher for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. This is the West Side, 1-800-228-5615. We've got three open phone lines for you. We'll be right back.
The president has made it clear.
We cannot be the policemen of the world.
But for a brief moment, it was. Nowadays, Russia, China, and Iran are working hard to destabilize Western democracies in general, and the American system in particular. Author Michael Mandelbaum on the rise and fall of peace on Earth. That's next time on 1A from WAMU and NPR.
At 1 on the Ideas Network. Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Snowbelt Fireplace and Stove, and the University of Wisconsin Foundation play a role in the success of WPR. Become a business sponsor. Go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Advent Health, a connected healthcare network providing whole person care. Advent Health is dedicated to empowering people to be healthy and to feel whole. More information is available at AdventHealth.com.
Monarch butterflies are getting ready for a big journey north to Wisconsin. Larry Mueller talks with an expert about the life cycles of monarchs, why it matters to us, and what we can do to help restore their habitat. That's after 11 this morning. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. This hour, we're talking about school funding in western Wisconsin with a look at how the next state budget could affect our region. Today's guests are Dr. Marianne Hardybeck, who's here with me in the Eau Claire studio. She is superintendent of the Eau Claire Area School District. Dr. Mark Bezik, district administrator for the Somerset School District, joins us by phone from his offices in St. Croix County. And Chapman, senior researcher for the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum, is here by phone as well from Milwaukee. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We do have open phone lines. I did see some calls coming in. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-228-5615. So, as I wanted to talk briefly about two-thirds funding, and it all probably folds into the what we've already been talking about. But Ann Chapman, I've heard this two-thirds funding. What does it mean? And when were we? Hi. When did it exist? When were we there?
Right. It's a good question to ask because I can tell you what it means in the past, but it's a little bit of an open question what it will mean going forward. You know, two-thirds funding was in place by a state statute between 1997 and 2003. So the state committed to funding two-thirds of what they call K-12 partial school revenues. And so what that basically said, I mean, with exceptions, is that the state was committing to paying two-thirds of the sum of school aids and property taxes levied for school districts. So what that would mean in today's terms would be sort of generally two-thirds of the revenue limit, you know, across the state that schools are subject to.
Mm-hmm.
That was eliminated in 2003-05 budget. And so since then, both Governor Evers and even Governor Walker before the election were calling for the state to go back to that. So the question will be, what it will be, two-thirds of what, you know, and to what extent will revenue limits, you know, be changed, and will it be two-thirds of a new sort of base of in terms of revenue limits, and what will be included in that two-thirds? It used to include those tax credits that I mentioned, you know. So some of these are the questions that people are wondering about.
1-800-228-5615. Marion Hardybeck, what does two-thirds funding from the state mean to the Eau Claire School District?
Well, I think it means that certainly that aid would come from the state. I think the question is about the revenue limit and whether or not that revenue limit would change. That would mean, and I think it would determine, whether or not school districts would have to continue to go out for referendums.
excuse me, 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Mark,
I'd like to make a call, please hang up. And
I think we lost Mark Bezik. Mark, if you can hear us, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. I wanted to talk a little bit about Act 10 and how it, you know, changed things with regard to school districts in Wisconsin. And if people are not familiar, because it's been a while, but Act 10 was a law that was passed early on in Governor Scott Walker's tenure. It basically restricted some of the it restricted bargaining rights for public employees, like say teachers, the state's teachers unions, and also increased contributions that public employees had to make towards their benefits. The governor and his supporters have said that this was a big win for districts because it freed up money. Districts were able to choose different insurance policies. You know, it was referred to as tools. So, Ann Chapman, let me start with you. We heard during the primary leading up to the gubernatorial race or the election, a lot of the Democrats, from what I remember, were talking about getting rid of Act 10. Is that possible? I mean, how would that even work? And do you have any, you know, can you tell us about what the long-term impact of the Act 10 legislation has been on the state schools?
Well, I think it'd be hard to unravel in the sense that those tools that were sort of touted by Republicans were in fact used by, you know, local school districts and municipalities, and it was helpful for a short amount of time. It really helped them reduce their health care expenditures and you know, just on the cost side, not looking at sort of the changes to collective bargaining, but mm-hmm. just in terms of those fiscal tools. You know, I suppose you could unravel Act 10 and still retain those types of things. That would be, you know, that's a political question.
Yes.
But one thing that we've been hearing has been sort of, I think, an unintended consequence of Act 10 And it goes back to the fact that we have this inequitable sort of distribution of revenue limits across the state. You know, every school district, for the listeners that may not realize this, every school district across the state has a different revenue limit, a different amount of money per pupil that they can spend. And it's basically based on what they were spending in the 90s. And so when you pair that with the Act 10 legislation that sort of it creates, you know, a teacher workforce that's sort of a free agent situation.
Sure.
You've got districts that are really competing for, you know, teacher talent. And we have an educator workforce shortage in this state, especially in specific areas like math and science and foreign language and, you know, bilingual ed. And so what happens is the districts with higher revenue limits with a little bit more spending ability are at an advantage when it comes to competing for teachers. So this is something that the governor's budget does try to address and, you know, has been talked about ever since Act 10 was put into place.
Mark Bezik, are you there?
I'm back.
Hey, welcome back. And say, I'm wondering, because I saw some of the rural districts saying that they were losing teachers to districts that had more revenue, you know, ability to raise revenues. So, you know, during the primary, we heard Act 10, it's got to go, we're going to repeal it. Of course, that's a primary. People kind of tend to change their positions after a primary. So, I mean, do you think that that would be possible, for one? And do you think that it would be, I mean, have there been any impacts that you heard about or you've seen since Act 10?
Yeah, I think, as Marianne said, there's been some unexpected ramifications of Act 10 that, you know, really fall, you know, near and dear to all of us, and, you know, it affects the teachers. And, you know, at a time when we have a teacher shortage, it's almost like major league sports. You know, you have a salary cap, and you're trying to get people in here to fit into the budget because, you know, you're not getting the increases you need. But one of the things that I've noticed, again, being here in the last 3 years, is some of the issues related to staff that kind of in their mid-career that were either frozen or didn't receive the increases that they probably should have, and now you're bringing in people because you need people. You can bring them in at any step you see fit as, and you're causing disparities amongst the rank and file, and that's really a morale killer. But on the other hand, you have to attract people, and you have to bring them in. So again, we're constantly looking at how can we, is there a way to rectify some of these situations that we've had? You know, part of our referendum that we're going for is we have to fix our compensation model because we have to be regionally competitive. We, you know, we're 30 miles out of the Twin Cities, and again, we have to strike that balance of what can we afford and how do we get highly qualified people into our system and keep and maintain the highly qualified ones that we have here. You know, it was unusual last year. We had 20 people, a combination of retirements and just going out into industry and leaving teaching altogether for a number of different reasons. But we need, and I think, you know, Ann said this, the predictability is so key for us as far as, you know, doing our budgets. What can we count on? You know, years ago, everyone was touting the Finnish system, you know, Finland, that, you know, their scores were so good and what have you. Well, two things. They all speak one language. That makes it easy for them. The other piece is that, to me, the miracle over there wasn't the schools. It was how the legislature got together and said, here's how we're going to fund schools. No matter what side you're on, hands off, we're going to make schools a priority. And that's what needs to happen here. We need a culture shift and a mindset shift to say, you know what, our kids are one of our biggest resources here. If we want to educate them, get them good jobs, and come back and stay here, because in western Wisconsin, we have an employee shortage also. We have major manufacturers around here that can't get people.
Marianne Hardebeck, can you speak to the morale? And first of all, I mean, with regard to Act 10, but also now we've got a governor who was the head of this public schools and a strong advocate. Have you seen a morale change since then?
Oh, I think morale has definitely changed, and I think it continues to be a challenge for all school districts. Here's how it plays out in Eau Claire. We are the eighth largest school district in Wisconsin, but we rank about 239 in spending per pupil. So that makes it very difficult for us to be competitive with our wages. And just as Mark was saying, we have situations in our district where you've hired someone new on a new compensation model, and they may come in a bit higher than someone who had worked here before. Mm-hmm. And that is a morale killer. Yeah. And as you try to adjust that, you're dealing with these revenue caps, which kind of tamp down your ability to make those adjustments.
We've got our first caller and probably the last one of the day. Probably, I say. We've got a couple minutes left. Jim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening for a while, and I really respect, I'm the proud father of a teacher, so I can go along with that. But as your expenses go up, my expenses go up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to talk about getting money from the state, last time I looked, I am the state. I pay those taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks to me like if property taxes are going up and aid from the state is going up and my income isn't, you're not helping me. I'm a retiree on a fixed income.
Thank you,
and I'll take your comments off the air.
Great, great comment. Thank you so much, Jim. Mark Bezik, what do you tell Jim?
Well, that's a very common structure or piece there. You know, my first comeback always is, you know, somebody paid for my education and helped get me to where I'm at. And it's the old thing about, you know, it takes a community, it takes a state. It's an investment in our future. Again, as I mentioned before, our economy, our way of life in this country depends on a highly educated workforce. You know, we have other countries that tout top test scores and what have you, but the beauty of our state and our country is we educate everyone to a high level.
We have only 30 seconds left. Ann Chapman, tell us what the future of this process will be. What's the next thing to watch for?
Well, we're going to be watching the Joint Finance Committee consider the governor's proposal and you know, hear from people in hearings across the state and put their stamp on the budget process, and then it'll go to the legislature and the governor again.
It's going to be a wild ride, I predict. So with that, thanks for listening. That's our time today on the West Side. Thank you for all the guests making this possible, Dr. Marianne Hardybeck, Dr. Mark Bezik, and Ann Chapman. Thanks to Team West Side, including Catherine Thomas for producing the program, Mort Cypress for handling on-air production, and Kate Springer and Kaylin Schumacher for promotions. I'm Rich Kramer. Tune in next week for another edition of the West Side. We continue our budget series with a look at transportation. Until then, have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.